Kankakee Podcast is proudly presented by Pewter Pros, Stitch Prints, and Digital World Design Family of Businesses, celebrating 25 years of small business ownership in Kankakee County. Learn more at mypewterpros.com, stitchprints.com, and digitalworlddesign.com.
Thankful for the way these stories hold on to the lifetime we won't give back. I know these rivers carry on. People tend to stick to you after time. Places tend to do the same as we do. This river carries on and on.
Hello and welcome to Kankakee Podcast, where we talk about the people and places of Kankakee County. I'm Jake Lamore, and before we get to today's episode, I want to take a look at some upcoming events that are happening in the area. And that includes Clove Alliance. They're hosting their 15th annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes at the Majestic in Kankakee this Friday, April 28th. The event aims to empower men and raise awareness of men's violence against women. You can register at clovealliance.square.site. Tickets are now on sale for Kankakee Valley Theater Association's production of In the Heights. Shows are this weekend, April 29th and 30th, and next weekend, May 6th and May 7th at the Lincoln Cultural Center. You can buy your tickets at kvta.org. If you haven't listened to episode 95 of Kankakee Podcast, I encourage you to do so because we sit down with the director, Sharla Ronchetto, and we talk about what In the Heights is all about. And last but not least, the Kankakee County Humane Foundation is celebrating 60 years of rescue this Saturday, April 29th, at their Paws and Purrs fundraiser at the Quality Inn in Bradley. That's from 5 to 9. Get tickets and more details at k3chf.org. And if you would like your community event to be mentioned here on Kankakee Podcast, you can email it to lamoremediallc@gmail.com for consideration. Now let's get to today's episode. This is our monthly episode with the Kankakee County Museum, where we dive into just a little piece of our county's history. Before we get into today's topic, just want to briefly mention some upcoming events happening with the Kankakee County Museum. The big thing that's coming up next month is the 33rd Annual Rhubarb Festival. That's Sunday, May 21st, on the grounds of the Kankakee County Museum. There's always so much going on, live entertainment, food. There's a pie eating contest for the second year in a row. They have the old car show. And there's also a Let Freedom Ring garden to pay tribute to missing in action area veterans and more. So lots of different things going on. I know Kankakee Podcast is going to have a booth there, so please drop by and say hello to us. But if you want to get more details on that, go to kankakeecountymuseum.com, or you can follow the museum on Facebook or Instagram at Kankakee County Museum. And today's episode, we are joined by Jory Walters.
Hello.
Who's the research coordinator at the museum. And it's been a hot minute since Jory's been here, so we're all excited that she's back. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
And today we are talking about one of the things that most of us have enjoyed in the area for decades at this point, and that is Perry Farm Park, which today is owned and operated by the Bourbonnais Township Park District. But way before then, it was not, right? It's been a longstanding thing. I mean, who is Perry? What is Perry? There's so much history behind Perry Farm.
Well, it started off with Thomas Durham. And Durham and his family came in the 1830s. They were from the East, and they were Quakers, and they just traveled west. They stopped a few places before they ended up in the Kankakee area. And they bought a piece of land, 169 acres. If you picture where the YMCA is and all the land down by the river, if you go past the Y, where Kennedy Drive is, and Kennedy Drive goes all the way to Court Street, all that area used to be just land way back before much of the settlement came. And so Thomas Durham came with his wife, Peggy, and they had several children by that time. And they came to this area. And if you look at Perry Farm, next to the house, you'll see a great big, huge oak tree. Well, there used to be two of those. One of them did not survive, but the other one did. So it said that he passed by this area and he really fell in love with this area, especially this piece of land. So he purchased it, and in the beginning, they just had a simple little kind of log cabin, and that the natives greeted them. They were not hostile. And then eventually he built the home. Well, if you look at Perry Farm House today, from different angles, you will see that it was added on a little here, added on a little bit there, and it was added on in different stages. But the original home, if you look at it from the south side looking north, it looks like would be a straight I, like just like the capital I. And at that time, they used to call them I houses. And you would have in the kitchen, you'd have the bottom floor, you had the kitchen and the dining living area. And then the stairs would have been in the middle, not where they are today. And there's a little bit of example in the house that shows you that. And then there would be two bedrooms upstairs. So that would account for the design of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's typical for a farmhouse.
For that house, I mean, back then.
All the bedrooms were upstairs.
Yes.
That's how they were all designed. Yeah, because I know my family's farmhouse is like that too.
And then they, built a little here and a little there. And then, but eventually they had some more children. And by that time, some of the children were, out of the house already. But can you imagine having a lot of children and having two bedrooms?
No, because how many kids originally did they have when they first came here?
I think they had about nine when they first came here. But they had 12 altogether. Some of them, I think, died when they were young. But that was typical back then. They had small houses and large families. And, of course, they had no heat upstairs. They just had little stoves that they had to use. So they must have had a lot of blankets on their beds. But the Perry Farm property is one of the oldest in the entire area. And then the barns, the horse barn, which is the barn which is closest to the road, and then the three bay barn, those were built by Durham. And then they have, new one, which was created by the Park District store machinery. And then there's a little white building that they did. They had a cow milk business later on. They did milk.
A milk house?
Milk house. There you go.
Yes.
Where they did that. And then in the middle there, they had land, which they would do a vegetable garden. Of course, every farm family had a vegetable garden. And then they had the woods in the back. Now, they also did farming. So back in the back area, if people walk back there, you see a clump of trees, a big area of trees, dense trees. And then beyond that, you see just arid land and you see, I think, trails. Do you know trails back there?
Yes.
But back then it was all farming. And so that was until about 1988 when the Park District took over. And I remember when I was growing up, I remember they had horses and I remember they had the farm and, it was great. And they had it was a very productive farm.
Kind of going back to the beginning with Durham, When he brought his family here, what kind of farming were they doing? Or were they doing farming at that point? Were they doing something else? What was his business?
Well, he also became Bourbon and Grove's postmaster. But one thing that they did do in their home, and they added on for this, they would host families who would come down the Bourbonnais Trace, because they would march all their cattle and hogs to the stockyards in Chicago. And so they were called prairie schooners. And so they would host them for an evening. And on their way to the Chicago stockyards, and so give them a place to stay and something to eat. So they added on in the back a little bit to that. So it was one of their additions to their house.
So Durham has a big family. And where does Perry come in?
Hey, David Perry was his son-in-law, married one of his daughters. Now,
which daughter? Do you know?
Durham's daughter, Martha.
Okay. And then Thomas Durham died in 1854, and I know he's buried on the property. There's a nice gravestone where you can visit his grave there on Perry Farm. And then what, his sons took over right after that, and then when the 1860s came around, they were having a hard time financially with the farm, and so that's when David Perry came into play, right? And he surprised them with purchasing the farm with cash. I remember reading one story claiming that David Perry tossed his wallet full of cash on the table and said, "I can lend a hand," which gave me a chuckle when I read that story. But then after David Perry passes away, then how does the land get passed on through the family, though?
And then, to make it simple, David Perry passed on the property to Alva Perry, his son. Alva Perry passed it on to his daughter, Lamira. Lamira just happened to have been the last living descendant of this whole chain of many decades. And she passed away in 1961. And her will said she really, really wanted the property to stay in the natural form, not to be developed. She really wanted it to be a state park. Well, the state said, no, we're not really interested. So they had sharecroppers who lived with them. And the family actually lived in Wilmette. And this was kind of their summer, kind of kept it as their summer property. David, Alva, Lamira just kind of became from their working family, the farm that they worked on, to the sharecroppers kind of took over. And they would come down to visit for holidays and see the land and whatnot. But the last person to live on the property, he just turned 100 years old. DeVoisin.
Yes. DeVoisin, yes.
And he was the last one to farm the property. And I believe settlement about 1988, and that's when it went over to the Park District.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. So that took a while because a lot of businesses were saying, but we want this land for development. And the naturalists said, no, we want it. So it's kind of a battle for many years. Kennedy Drive was like the main, they really, really wanted to put businesses in there because if you're standing like on the sidewalk of Kennedy Drive and you look towards the farm, you see a beautiful oasis of land in the country. And you turn your head the other direction and you see, you know, civilization,
yes,
of businesses and homes. And it's like the old meeting the new, mm-hmm, and it's very interesting. And I honestly believe a lot of people don't realize how old this property was.
Yeah.
And actually there is a gate that is right on Kennedy Drive. You cannot drive through it the entrance is on the other side, other street, but that used to be the entrance to go in and out of. And actually, there is another barn. I did not. It's a garage, actually. Pardon me. It's a garage that was there much later during LaMyra's period, because she had a car.
Sure, at that time, yeah.
I forgot that building. Yeah. Pardon me.
But thank goodness for her fight and keeping that space. Because just think about how we have that daily reminder of where this all started and where we where we come from, kind of thing. Because otherwise, it would just be all gutted.
1830s to 1961. That is a long time to have property in your family. And I will mention one other thing. That property was under 9 different flags of America. When, you know, the French had it and then the English had it, and then it was not 50 states. It was before, you know, and when the flag, when Illinois became a state, you know, there's so different things that happened in America that this piece of land made it through. And actually, I have an uncle who used to work on that farm with Mr. DeVoisin. And when he was younger, and has had a lot of stories to tell about that.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was just very interesting. So this park property just has been through so much. And the house, you can go in the house during their business hours, and there are artifacts in there. And you can look through. That's kind of like a little museum. You cannot go upstairs, but you can see all the artifacts downstairs. And a lot of things are labeled. And you can see the family tree. You can see other things. And we also have a list, or should say I have a list, of items that we have upstairs that we have of the Perry property that we take care of at the Park District. And so it's just been very interesting to see, to be associated with such a prominent piece of land that just means so much. And then several years ago, we had Kankakee landmark status, historic status for the Kankakee County. And I encourage anybody who has not gone to the land to visit. We also have some information outside as well. There is a little bitty, kind of looks like a little house that is in the yard, and that housed their water supply. Now, water was a big deal back in old properties. You had to be either next to a creek or next to a river really to get your source. Now, if you're lucky and you had a natural spring on your property, natural well, that was great. It could have been, since yards property were huge back then, it could have been way out in the middle of who knows where, and you had to bring buckets of water back into the house and into the barns and whatnot. But they were lucky to have their water source so close to the home, as was the small property. They had their well very, very close to the back door, or I should say the side door. And that's something I kind of stress to kids when I do tours as well, is the water source. Very important, and you may not think of it now, but if you had to bring in buckets of water every day to help your parents do the cleaning or do water the animals or water the garden, you had to keep bringing in buckets. You really wanted them close.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Wanted the water close by.
Yeah, absolutely.
This family went from horse and buggy and growing all their own items to 1960s, the age of shopping centers and grocery stores and all the technology that was coming out in the late 50s, 60s. So that is quite remarkable that this family lasted that long, and we still cherish the property that they cherished. And the Perry Farm Preservation Committee, that's what we do to help educate the population on the background of the property, but also maintain it, you know, for future generations and for people to get out and enjoy taking a walk back in the area, enjoy the cliffs of the Indian caves, and then learn a little bit, you know, as you do it, and realize that we have a very precious piece of land that is great to share. And I must also say they did maple. They had a lot of maple trees. So they did a lot of syrup.
So they did syrup. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, just want to point out that this is pretty much going to end up being a two-parter, just because there's all the history that comes after, you know, the park district
yes.
acquires it. That's a whole nother story that we will get into eventually here on the podcast, yeah. probably with the park district, because they're the ones that hold the knowledge of that.
Right.
You know, so, but there was, you did mention there, obviously there was some type of battle though in the 80s trying to figure out who would
eventually
take it over.
Yeah. And control the people who wanted to keep it more of a natural setting as is, and those who really wanted to commercialize the area with homes or with businesses. Yeah, so that is a definitely another
right. That's a whole
era.
A whole nother era that we'll eventually get into.
And anybody listening who wants to know more about Perry Farm, you are absolutely welcome to contact me at the Kankakee County Museum. You can reach out, email, or call, and I have a thick file on it, and you're welcome to inquire and do some more research, ask questions on it, because they were one of the county's first settlers that came here, and they were English, and they came into a French-Canadian settlement.
Yeah, they're one of the few of English families, right? I mean,
yeah, because Bourbonnais was primarily French Canadian, and then we also had English, but we had, that's a great topic too, migration that came into our area for another day.
Yes.
But so they were, you know, one of the first to come to our area and to build a home, and then to have such a huge piece of property. And if I remember correctly, their property even extended past the railroad. I think it extended way past into East Bradley as well.
So it extended past Kennedy Drive then, is what you're saying?
Past Kennedy, all of what was the original plat for Bradley. And if I remember correctly, even East Bradley. The houses in East Bradley, I believe that was also part of their properties. So it went a long ways that there was just nothing going on in this area. It was just land, and people would cross over it to get to Kankakee or to get to Bradley. And it was kind of in limbo. But if you think about it, it was in limbo for what, 60 years between 1830s approximately to 1892. Of the land in the middle, which is Bradley. I'm from Bradley, so I'm kind of partial to the development of Bradley, but that's also another thing for another day. But I do encourage anybody, I know Perry Farm is a popular destination for people, especially coming into the spring and the summer months where you can be outside and walking around. But I encourage you to come out and visit the property, and then look at the signs up near the house. I will say that all of the property further on where the museum is and all that, that's all, of course, Park District. That was just land back then. But up near the house, we have some information about the property. So learn a little bit, and then go out and enjoy the Indian caves and the river.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah, there's a lot to enjoy at Perry Farm. So, and stay tuned definitely for a part two of Perry Farm, and we'll kind of cover some of the modern story of Perry Farm and what it has been since the Park District took it over. So there'll definitely be a
And we're very, very honored to have Francis DuVois and talk about his memories with Perry Farm. Actually, they had a birthday party for him. I believe it was, let's say, about March.
It was February or March of this year, yeah.
And I went to it.
Oh, you were there? Okay.
I was there. And I actually talked to him a little bit, and he remembered my uncle, and talked to him a little bit. But it's wonderful to have somebody who was part of.
Yeah. Is there anything that he shared with you that was significant to the farm that you can remember?
No, I mostly asked him about if he remembered working with my uncle.
Yeah.
He just did so much for this farm, kept it running, and him and his family, and they kept it running. And then he was the last one, and he's still with us.
Yeah.
And that is wonderful. So I will say, in my opinion, he is kind of the last descendant. Not really, but
you could say adopted.
Adopted.
Well, Jory Walters, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by again.
Thank you.
And encourage everyone to also visit the Kankakee County Museum and the French Heritage Museum. That's also part of the Kankakee County Historical Society. And then the Rhubarb Fest coming up Sunday, May 21st, starts at 10 a.m., goes till 4 p.m. I think I failed to mention the time on that. What's wonderful is that there's no entry fee to go to the Rhubarb Fest, and there's plenty of things that you and your family can check out there.
There's always people who have booths who sell things, can tour the small house. I am always in the house doing the tours. A lot of vendors inside.
Schoolhouse is open.
The schoolhouse is open. Buy a whole pie, buy a slice of pie. And then, of course, the other things that we have, the car show and the pie eating contest, that'll be.
Yeah, that's the second year they've done that this year. And just to point out, just real quick, not to get super detailed, but so many people are always wondering, why is it called the Rhubarb
Fest?
Why
rhubarb? Yes.
Yeah, why rhubarb? Well, that's what the small family grew on that property for several years. Dr. Small, he was obsessed with rhubarb.
Yes, he grew right where the museum is standing was his rhubarb farm. Rhubarb patches also near the hospital, near Riverside Hospital, was also more land that they owned that they grew rhubarb. And he loved the crop so much, and it had such good luck growing it. They sold it nationwide from this location, and they decided to have a festival in honor of that every year.
Yeah, it ties in well. It's why not? So that's where that comes from, in case you've ever wondered. And KankakeeCountyMuseum.com, of course, follow them on social media at Kankakee County Museum. And I think that wraps it up.
Yes, thank you so much. And I'll be back for another session.
Just a couple more things before we wrap up. There was a few things that Jory had sent my way after we finished recording this about Thomas Durham, the original owner of Perry Farm and the land surrounding that. He was not only the postmaster at one point, but he was an elected official, the Rock Village Precinct Commissioner, to be exact, in 1836, and I believe that was for 2 years. Now, during Durham's tenure as commissioner, that's when the Bourbonnais Grove Log Schoolhouse was erected and built in 1837, and so he had a hand in that as well, and that's the log schoolhouse that they just completed the restoration on that you can see in Bourbonnais. The village of Bourbonnais and the Bourbonnais Grove Historical Society teamed up for that. I'm sure the Park District had something to do with it as well. But if you remember that log schoolhouse episode we did just last fall, if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to it. But it's cool to think that that was erected during Durham's time as the Rock Village Precinct Commissioner. And that schoolhouse, if you remember, served students from 1837 to about 1848. And also, Route 102, he was petitioning to make Route 102 a state road. Durham was during his time as commissioner as well. So he actually had a lot to do with the early development of Bourbonnais Grove beyond Perry Farm. If you take in the count of the state road and then postmaster, and then of course the log schoolhouse as well. We are going to do a second part, a part two about Perry Farm, as I mentioned earlier. That'll probably be with some representatives from the Bourbonnais Township Park District, and we'll kind of get into more of the history from when the Park District acquired the property in the 80s and then go on from there. I just felt like it was best to break those things up, because that in itself is a whole nother story that we can get into. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Kankakee Podcast. I'm Jake Lamore. We are proudly presented by Pewter Pros, Stitch Prints, and Digital World Design family of businesses, celebrating 25 years of small business ownership in Kankakee County. You can learn more at mypewterpros.com, stitchprints.com, and digitalworlddesign.com. Also, a special thank you to our patrons for helping make this episode possible, including Don Geisinger, Diana Crowley, Joseph Lamont, Bill Parakis of Meineke Car Care Center, Lori Krayoch, Karen Bishop, SLS Home Inspections, Seth and Mary Berkey, Jake Lee, Jesse Arsenal, Dave Barron, Veronica Featherston, John Sullivan, Sue Hornung, Samantha Rocknowski, Lake Iverson, Travis Garcia, Jane Bostwick, Simon Topless, Scott Wright, Carrie O'Connell, Jamie Race, Joanne Barry, Anthony Vicelli, Natalie Flagel, Carl Erps, Jeff and Rosa Carroll, Teague Dreenan, Sandy and Steve Twait, and Rose Lucky. To become a podcast patron, go to kankakeepodcast.com, then click on the Patron tab. If you pledge $5 or more per month, you'll also hear your name announced on an episode of the podcast. There's also access to extended versions of episodes, video versions, and more. Our theme song was written and performed by Lupe Carroll and recorded by Daniel Bishop. This river came.